Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 3 of Season 4 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Jake Lewitt of the Deep Blue Sea podcast, the Lamperty on the Lamb, and the host of Lamperty on the Lamb, and obviously also the co-host of Con Air Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Thank you for having me back again, Rob. Pleasure to be here.
I hope I got all those credits right.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. All right. Well, minute three begins with the continuation of Nora Ephron's credit and ends with Amanda and Harry continuing to smooch. So we've spent 2 days talking about credits. Today we have little bit left. It was painful.
There's people, faces, and humans on screen.
Yes.
Ties tucked into trousers.
That's right. But before we get to that, we have one other thing that we need to talk about. There is the final credit right before the movie actually begins, or the moving pictures of the movie begins. And that is the credit of the director, Robert Norman Reiner, who was born on March 6th, 1947, started out as an actor. He was very prominent in the TV show All in the Family, which ran from 1971 to 1979, playing Michael Stivic, nicknamed Meathead, who was Archie Bunker's son-in-law.
That's where he met Billy Crystal, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because Crystal played the first out gay character on network TV.
No, that wasn't soap.
That was in Soap. Different show.
But I'm pretty sure that Billy Crystal was on an episode of All in the Family, and that's probably how they
met. They did meet there.
He actually won 2 Emmys for his role as a Best Supporting Actor in a comedy for playing Mike Stivic. He has gotten nominations from the DGA for one of Jay's favorite movies, Stand By Me, for this movie.
For the listeners, that's not true.
That's right. For this movie and for the movie A Few Good Men, which came out 3 years after this movie.
One of my favorite movies. I love that film.
Such a great movie. At what? Not a?
Such a great film.
Such a great film, yes. Right. And he even got an Oscar nomination for Best Picture for A Few Good Men also. And he's also gotten 4 Golden Globe nominations for Best Director. He is also largely known for doing the mockumentary This Is Spinal Tap, the movie The Princess Bride, Misery, The American President, The Bucket List, LBJ. I mean, he has so many different things that he's directed. I always find the fact that if you look at his filmography of movies that he's directed, they're all completely different. You know, many people, they stay within a similar genre or things like that. He's all over the place with everything that he does.
I think with Robert Reiner, he's good with a good script. He doesn't, to me, have a lot of a directorial fingerprint. You can't really. I feel like if you're presented a film and don't know anything about it, you couldn't say like, yes, this is a Rob Reiner film, because as you say, his films are all so different. But if you give him a really good script, he'll make a really good film out of that.
Yes,
which, you know, is what we're seeing here, which is the case with things like The Princess Bride, Misery, American President. Like A Few Good Men. Working with like great writers.
Stand By Me.
I mean,
he made Stephen King cry by seeing the movie.
Stand By Me. I don't hate Stand By Me. I just don't love it as much as everybody else. That's all. Like, it's not out there on my hit list. It's just like, it's not something I enjoy. I don't. But like Misery, great script. He did a great job with it.
Right.
But he's not like a, this is why I'm not sure if I said it on air or before in a previous minute where I said this. To me, feels more like a Nora Ephron film than a Rob Reiner film. I know that the character of Harry is based on Rob Reiner. The character of Sally is based on Nora Ephron. But compare this to other Rob Reiner films and compare this to other Nora Ephron films, it's more similar to other Nora Ephron films than other Rob Reiner films, my opinion.
Okay, but if you're going by what you said, so it's because Nora Ephron, the type of things that she writes are all similar, but Rob Reiner, you know, jumps from genre with everything that he's doing. And that's why it makes sense what you're saying, that it doesn't feel like a Rob Reiner movie because of that fact.
Yes, I don't think there is such a thing as a Rob Reiner movie.
Yes.
There is no template for it, which can be a good thing.
Yes.
Then again, I haven't watched any of his films since The Bucket List, and he's made 6 to 10 films since then, but none of them have really struck with the audiences right. as much.
Well, I think his movies in the 80s and 90s struck the audience much better, and then after Absolutely. That, things yeah. just tapered off a little bit. Yes. You know, I'm not saying that he did a terrible job with all those movies, but they just weren't as, you know, poignant, Good. I guess you can say. No, like The Bucket List is an okay movie, you know, with Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman, but it's not something I would say, oh, this is a movie I want to watch over and over and over, or even do minute Absolutely. By minute. You know, it's yeah. not that type of thing.
It's so covering it minute by minute isn't on your bucket list, you're saying?
Very good. No. The opposite. Covering the bucket list is not on my bucket list, yes. My bucket list, there are numerous films on my bucket list to do minute by minute.
Oh, I know.
You know better than anyone else. You know better than anyone else because you always talk about, you know, what am I going to do next? What should I do next? And, you know, I value your opinion. And that's why you started, you know, practicing about naked Tai Chi, you know, learning yep. all about it. And you're just going to have to wait.
I'm not just learning. I'm doing it every day.
All right, that's fine. It's a good thing that this is just, you know, voice only. We don't have to see a video of this. Thank you, Jay. But in about 4 months, we'll let people and myself hear your thoughts on that. You know, that is the next thing in the you know, in the chamber. That's the next
Rennie
thing.
Harlin.
There you go. Exactly. So Rob Reiner was married to Penny Marshall from 1971 to 1991, and he adopted her her daughter Tracy, who was in Die Hard. She had a spot in Die Hard. She's in the movie A League of Her Own. If I remember correctly, she even has a small part in this movie. I'm trying to remember if she does or doesn't. But we'll get there if she is. If she does. Yes, she does. She plays Emily. I don't remember who. At this point, I don't remember who Emily is.
Maybe it's one of her
friends. I think it's one of Sally's friends later on.
It's either one of Sally's friends or one of Harry's girlfriends. That's the cast of the film, basically.
Oh, that's right. It's Emily. Okay, now I know who it is. It's the one who makes the cakes. The one who has the bakery.
Okay, right.
Right. So you're right. It's one of Harry's girlfriends, where they make fun of the fact that how young she is, which makes yes. sense if she's Rob Reiner's daughter, you know, so, or stepdaughter. He actually met his second wife while making this movie. Michelle Singer. We'll get to that story later on at some point during the course of this. And they have actually 3 children. And they're both big advocates of you know, they have this nonprofit organization called Parents Action for Children, which is a organization that tries to where the importance to raise awareness on the importance of the children's early years by producing and distributing celebrity-hosted educational videos for parents. Sounds like a lot of fun. And to advance the public policy through parental education and advocacy. So.
And, of course, his dad is Carl Reiner.
Yes. And his mother, we'll get to his mother later on also.
She has nothing to do with this film.
No, of course
not. Like, Carl Reiner obviously directed The Jerk, starring Steve Martin. From your previous endeavor of yours,
mm-hmm.
Who I first met as Saul Bloom in the Ocean's Trilogy.
Yes,
I was like, this guy's great. He's a director of that. His son did. Oh my god, I love finding out stuff like he just.
You didn't know before that? Before you saw him in Ocean's 11, you didn't know?
I was 14 when I saw Ocean's 11, so I hadn't really looked tracked down many Carl Reiner films in my early teens. This old guy in this film I love. Great.
Okay, fair enough. He was actually, I think he was the director of Summer School, which is such a hilarious movie. It's really stupid, but it's hilarious.
I haven't seen it. I've heard it recommended before as being a good film, but I've looked into it and thought it doesn't sound great.
It's Mark Harmon. Come on, everyone thinks of Mark Harmon now as this straight-laced guy, and he does a comedy. You know, he does it as a comedy. He's the Jim teacher.
Mark Harmon to me is just the agent in The West Wing.
Oh, okay, that's true. Not even
that's all NCIS. I know he's got a TV show or two. I don't know, but he's just
not
he's
anymore
from The West Wing.
He's out of it already. But you're right. Oh, that's right. I totally forgot about the fact that he was on West Wing because he was on like four episodes or something like that.
Yeah. But it's a memorable arc.
Yes. Oh, for sure it is. It is. No question about that.
I've watched The West Wing like five times. So.
I think I've only seen it twice. I keep meaning to watch it, but I don't have I find time to rewatch it. You know, and I want to also listen to the podcast. I heard that the podcast is great. The
podcast is fantastic.
Yeah. I listened to the West first episode. I said to myself, I'm going to watch and then listen, watch and listen, watch and listen. And I got through one episode so far about 6 months ago.
They get most of the cast on over the course of the run. I mean, it helps having Joshua Molina being on the show.
Yes.
And so he knows all the cast. Aaron Sorkin's on there. Tommy Shalami's on, everyone involved with the show. It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, it helps if you have connections. You know, I can't just call up Rob Reiner and say, Rob, I want to have you on my podcast. You know,
just tweet at him every day.
But Joshua Molina can do that. He can. I cannot.
I think they have Richard Schiff on like 10 times. And he and Joshua Molina have an antagonistic relationship, shall we say.
Okay, that will be fun to eventually get to. Mm. Okay, so the film moves along, and we get a big fade out. And then we get a shot of an elderly couple sitting on a couch.
Now, this is not Harry or Sally, I believe.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe it's them in the future.
It doesn't sound like them. He's putting on a voice.
Ah, okay. Well, when he starts talking, let's first give our first impressions of them, okay? So as you mentioned earlier, you know, we have someone with sitting in a pinstripe suit with a red tie with blue dots on it that is tucked into his pants.
Yep.
You know, which is quite interesting to look at, you know, and then the woman next to him is, you know, wearing a, perfectly done white blouse, you know, wearing gold earrings, a red skirt. You know, and she has like a gold charm, you know, around her neck or at the top button of that blouse, right? And then he begins to talk, and so I'm just gonna say his whole little diatribe here. We're not gonna break it down at this point. Well, maybe afterwards.
My friend Arthur Kornblum. Goes,
I was sitting with my friend Arthur Kornblum in a restaurant. It was a Horn and Hardin cafeteria, and this beautiful girl walked in, and I turned to Arthur and I said, Arthur, you see that girl? I'm going to marry her. And 2 weeks later, we were married. And it's over 50 years later, and we're still married. So, I mean, one of the first things I want to say about this movie, okay, has all of these interludes with all these documentary couples. A little spoiler alert, in the script, there are more than the ones that are actually in the movie itself. So, we'll talk about what they say over the course, you know, when we talk about the script. But as things go along, obviously. But my first question that I ask about so the whole idea here was they were gonna get real stories from real people and have them record from the real people, which makes a lot of sense. Sounds like a lot of fun. You know, that's what you want. You want to hear real stories. You know, it's like off the beaten track. You know, stories.
There you go. Until they tried it and discovered that real people can't tell a good story.
That's right. The real people, they might have a good story, but they don't know how to tell it properly. So they decided that, okay, we're going to take the real stories and we're just going to have actors read off their lines. And so that's what they did.
The first time I found that out, I was amazed. Because all of the couples in this are excellent. It feels like a real couple. I don't think this is not a real couple. But I know they're actors, they're paid to act, but they all do such a great job. You just believe it. You believe every one of these stories, you believe it. Now, these two, of all the couples in it, I'm glad I got these two, because these are the ones that remind me most of my grandparents, of my dad's parents, which are the only two that I know well, the only two that are still alive. They look a bit like my granddad. She doesn't say anything. My grandma rarely says anything. My granddad, you can't get to shut up. These two really remind, and their story is like similar to my grandparents, where my granddad would tell us, like, I just was at a dance one day, I said, oh, I'm gonna date that woman. It's a little less romantic when you find out that they got married because he was in the army and you got paid more if you were married, if you're in the army. in the UK. So he just went home and was like, you want to get married? I get an extra $2 a week. And so they got married, and then, what is it, almost 70 years later, they're still together.
Very nice. That's
so, good. I mean, it works, but it's not a very romantic start.
Okay, but back then, but that's the thing. Back then, things were very different.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. That's one of the things I like about all these different couples that they show through the course of this movie is that they're all from different structures.
Yeah,
you know, different backgrounds, different backgrounds and things like that. And they're all believable with the type of stories that they're telling. You know, so here, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that it reminds you of your grandparents. It reminds me also of my grandparents the same way. My grandparents, I think, are possibly a generation before your grandparents. It's possible.
Maybe.
Let's put it this way. My grandparents are closer to the real age of these people. Okay. In a few seconds, I'll mention who these actors are, and that'll help a little bit. But you're 100% right. It's the idea that, you know, my grandfather would talk all the time, and he was basically the spokesman. You know, my grandmother didn't say anything. She would just sit there on the side and wouldn't say anything. You know, he would tell her what to do. That's right. And I love that she does that here because, you know, you see that while he's talking, she just, you know, pats his hand a little bit, you know, and like rubs her hand back and forth on his arm, meaning, you know, good job, that type of thing. You know, it's a completely different generational aspect to obviously what we see now or what we saw with our parents and things like that. But with grandparents, it's a completely different story, you know, that back then that was what was acceptable at the time, you know, right or wrong.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
Yeah. She's not the only female member of the couple who doesn't say anything.
Correct.
Throughout the film.
Correct.
But if you just look at her performance, I see a real sadness to her. But like when she pats his arm, she kind of looks down and like sighs a little bit. And I feel like if this was their story, the film would be called "We're Still Married."
Because but she also bobs her head up and down, like saying that, you know, showing that he's right about what he's saying and stuff like that. And then she looks over at him, you know, and I hear what you're saying, that there might be a little bit of sadness, but that was also the way things were back then.
Right. But it's like in 2 weeks, I'm going to marry.
She does smile. Time. She does smile at him.
Yeah. I mean, Stockholm Syndrome exists.
Go back to Die Hard Minute if you want to hear about Stockholm Syndrome or Helsinki Syndrome.
Because, I mean, when he says, oh, I'm going to marry that woman 2 weeks later, we did, doesn't explain whether in those 2 weeks he kidnapped her.
Right, exactly. That was the point I was going to make. It would be so much better if she also explained her side of the story. You know, I was in this restaurant and I was kidnapped by this man. You know,
We were married in 2 weeks, but I didn't see daylight for another 3 years.
50 years. This is the first time he's let me out. You know, who knows?
They're still inside. Who knows? This is in their bunker.
Yeah, could be. But it means that everyone else will be in the same bunker because it's the same couch and, you know, wallpaper in the back. So they were invited to their house to do this. So there's a few things I wanted to mention about first of all, the story and you can see what time it is on the woman's watch. It's 2:10 in the afternoon. Or 2:10 at night. Who knows? Maybe it's 2:10.
Oh, people get up early, I guess.
That's right. No, probably not that early. They're actually 2:10 makes sense that they're awake. You know, that type of thing. It's the right time. But this is the story that created the whole idea.
Yeah,
Rob Reiner.
It's Alan F. Horn, the producer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Rob Reiner was at Alan Horn's house, who they're good friends with. Okay. And they were talking, and I don't know if it was, I'm not really clear if it was connected to When Harry Met Sally or not, but at some point, you know, Alan Horn's father was there and he said to him, he says, "Hey, how'd you guys get together?" And then he told this exact story.
I heard it differently. I heard it that it was a pre-production dinner for When Harry Met Sally. And they had lots of people there, and Alan Horn's parents happened to be in town. And so they were kind of there at this dinner party, but they didn't know anyone, so they kind of sat to the side. And Rob Reiner, being Rob Reiner, just kind of found the people who weren't talking to anybody, sat down next to them and just did small talk for an hour. I was like, "Well, how did you guys meet?" and that's what they said. That's the story that I read.
Oh wow! So, okay, it's completely different.
Similar. It's still Rob Reiner sitting down with this couple,
yeah,
and demanding their life story from them.
Right. Whether right or wrong, I actually like my version better because it's the idea that it's no, not because I'm telling it. I like it better because of the fact that it's, you know, it's in a you know, it's just in their house. It's not like it's in a social setting related to the movie. I mean, I had heard it that this was something that gave him the idea that he wanted to put these little documentary shots into the script.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. But either way, it works. I mean, the bottom line is that at least we both did our research properly, that it came from Alan Horn's parents, you know?
Yes. He was one of the producers from Castle Rock.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. As we mentioned that earlier this week, that he's one of the producers. He's right now in his second retirement phase. he was retired from Walt Disney, I think. He was working for Walt Disney. For Disney, they retired him because they wanted to bring in like younger people, and then he got rehired by Warner Brothers afterwards. And it wasn't Walt Disney. He was.
I thought he was at Disney.
No, he was at Disney. That was his second. That was his second job.
Second one.
He was originally at Warner Brothers. And then he was forced to retire at the age of 68, being the COO of Warner Brothers, because they wanted to groom younger talent. So that was in 2012. And then a year later, he was urged by Walt Disney Company to come and become their, they created a position for him, and he became the chairman of Walt Disney Studios. And then after that, they pushed him off, and he got like this other job as the CCO of Walt Disney Studios, the chief creative officer.
Yes, but now he's back at Warner Brothers.
Then he retired again, and now he's back at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's very busy. I mean, he's in his 80s, or he's almost 80. He'll be 80 in February, February 20th. He will be 80. You know, just as we're halfway through this movie, at that point
he shares a birthday with my dog.
I'm sure he would be very happy to hear that.
my dog will be very happy, I'm sure.
Ah, your dog. Okay. Well, who's older?
Alan, very much so.
I mean in dog years.
Oh, in dog years.
Well, in dog years, Alan's older too, because, you know, 80, yeah, 80 multiplied is. By yeah. 7 is that. Yeah. But, well, how old is your dog?
He will be 8 in February.
No, he's a young one. He's only 64.
A spring chicken.
Yeah. That's right. He's only 64. No, 60. No, 56. There you go.
56.
Even, I never said I was a math person. now, one of the things I love is that in his speech, he says that they were, what cafeteria were they in? The Horn and Hardens.
I was trying to work out what the heck he said. I don't want to go to the script because he's like the Horn and Bird. I thought he said like the Horn and Island cafeteria.
No, he said the Horn and Hardart cafeteria.
What is that?
I don't know. I think it's made up because of the fact that, you know, he uses the name Horn. You know, I think that you know, the idea is maybe there's someone named Hardart that's here. I don't know. I don't even know what Alan Horn. I couldn't find what Alan Horn's father's name is. So.
Okay, I assumed it was some kind of a chain. Maybe I hadn't connected it to Alan Horn. I didn't put those two thoughts together. So you're a step ahead.
I try to be. That isn't that what I'm trying to do here? Yeah. You know what? It is a real place. What do you know? You are correct. It's a real place. It was opened by. It is a cafeteria. That's a food service company. That's located in Baltimore, Philadelphia, and New York City. And it was created by Joseph Horn and Frank Hardart. And in 1888, they opened up their first restaurant. So, yeah. And it was around for, I think it's still around. Yeah. From what I understood, it's still around. That's pretty interesting. I don't know where. I don't know where you can find one of these, but so you see, I just assumed that it was related to Alan Horn. Maybe this is Alan Horn's father. I don't know.
It could be. I tried to search for Arthur Kornblum, but all that comes up is this film.
Yeah, so did I. Same thing. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. It closed in 1991. So, yeah. And then they renamed itself Hanover Direct in 1993. And then that year, the company bought Gumps. Ooh. There you go. So Forrest Gump is Bubblegum. There you go. Interesting. So yeah, it is a real place. Apparently not connected to Arthur Horn. I thought that was great that they would do that. That he would throw that in there, and I would say, okay, where can I find the information about who Hardart is in this whole thing? But apparently not. Oh well, nice try. But what can I do? Yeah, so apparently it's a real place that he's in. So the two actors that we see here on screen are Kuno Sponholz.
Fantastic name.
Yeah, and Connie Stoyer. Okay, so Kuno Sponholz has only 8 acting credits, and he lived from 1911 to 1996, passing away at the young age of 85. Okay, his other credits are really crazy ones. He's in a movie called Whore 2, Street Hunter, Basket Case 2, Delivery Boys, Night of the Zombies, and then the other two I do recognize, Zelig and Radio Days, which are both Woody Allen movies.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was really funny that these are the type of movies that he's in. He's in Whore 2. Yeah.
It's an eclectic career. I mean, Whore 2 apparently is also known as Five Girls, is its alternate title.
I don't think it really makes a difference.
Nope, no, so either.
He fled Nazi Germany, and he was an attorney beforehand, and then he was a talent manager in Manhattan. So apparently he wasn't really a full-time actor.
Well, his first acting career was Night of the Zombies in 81,
right,
when he was already 70.
Yes.
So maybe he was retired from being a talent manager, and then he thought, hey, I'm gonna be an old guy in some films.
Could be. So he was approximately 78 when they made this film, which goes along with the theme here that he's it's the right age. Now the woman who is next to him, Connie Sawyer,
far more illustrious career.
A little bit, yes. She has 140 credits on IMDb. She was born in 1912, and she passed away in 2018 at the age of 105.
Yeah.
Okay, she was known as the Clown Princess of comedy. I couldn't find out why. I couldn't find it out.
She had a big red nose.
Apparently. She only was in her first movie in 1959, because she was on the stage before that. And then one of the stage plays that she was starring in, Frank Sinatra wanted to make a film about and decided to cast her in it. Okay. And when she passed away, she was considered the oldest working actress. She had a career that spanned over 85 years.
She was the original True Grit.
Yes. And she also was the oldest member of the Screen Actors Guild. And she was a voting member of the Academy, and she voted until she died. She was considered that. She how did she get this role? Do you know how she got this role?
I do not.
She actually auditioned for the role that they eventually gave to Estelle Reiner, the diner role.
Yes. Yeah.
And they decided to give her this role instead. Now, I just find it really funny.
She had one line and said she gets no lines.
No, but I think it's really funny that someone who's known as the Clown Princess of comedy has no speaking lines.
Yeah.
In a movie.
Like her credit in True Grit is talkative woman at hanging, which not in this film, she's not.
No.
Not very talkative. So,
no. She was also in Dumb and Dumber. Pineapple Express. She played the grandmother in Pineapple Express. She was in Injustice for All, Out of Sight. She had a bunch of TV credits over the years also. But she was a very prolific actress. And
episode of The Office, The American Office. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's two episodes of ER, but everyone has two episodes of ER.
Yeah, I love when you see people on a particular show and then they come back on a different episode, but they're a completely different actor. Yeah, you see that a lot on Law and Order.
That is the case here. In 1999, yes. She played Kathy Brennan, and in 2006, she played Second Old Lady. Not even the first one, she's the second one.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens quite often. But yeah. She was on that 70s show also. She played Aunt Pearl.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of comedies. She was some kind of a clown princess or something.
Something like that. But it's really weird because anywhere I found in her obituary or on IMDb or Wikipedia, it just mentions, they all mention that she was known as the clown princess of comedy, but no one explains why.
You'll never know.
We won't. What can I tell you? And after the story ends, so the screen fades out again, and then it starts up again, and we see... We see a picture of a building in the distance, you know, with a road going through the middle of the screen, trees on both sides of this road, people walking on the left-hand side, and then you see a couple kissing on the right-hand side, you know, from the distance. And you can see that there's like a duffel bag or something on the ground next to the man. And then the screen says University of Chicago, 1977. And then we get a close-up of them, and we see the woman talking to the man, and she goes, "I love you," and he says, "I love you," and that's all the dialogue we get this minute, basically. You know, another dialogue-heavy minute, but
and then they kiss.
Now, this character is played by Michelle Nicastro, who was born in 1960 and unfortunately passed away in 2010. Okay, she has 35 credits, mostly just through the 90s. Up until the 90s. So there's a 10-year gap where she didn't. She passed away on November 4th, 2010, of breast cancer, at the age of 50. She was obviously in this movie. She was in The Swan Princess. She was on It's Gary Shandling's Show. And she was married to Steve Stark, which I'm assuming is not related to any other Starks that we might think of.
Probably not Tony.
Probably not Tony Stark. He's a producer. He's a TV producer.
I see. Definitely not Tony. Okay.
You never know. Maybe his secret identity, you know, maybe he is also Iron Man. I don't know. He's a producer of The Handmaid's Tale. And a whole bunch of TV shows. Medium, a TV show called Wednesday, The Event.
He appeared as himself in one episode of Mouse-a-Size, which apparently is a Disney kids exercise TV show, which would do exercise routines and health tips set to popular classic Disney tunes.
Interesting. I wonder how old he was at the time.
There was one episode, and he is in it. It was in 1983.
Interesting. My assumption is he was in his 20s at the time.
Yeah.
And that would be my assumption. I could be right. I could be wrong. I don't know. I mean, she was born in 1960.
That's the one thing on his IMDb page I chose to click on was Mouse's eyes.
Wait, but no, he was in the casting department.
No, he's
cast. Oh, no, sorry. He was casting department Star Search. Star Search.
Yes. He is in the cast. Is him, Kellen Plaschet is the star, and then Steve Stark and Wayne Alwyn. Wayne played Mickey Mouse. So I don't know.
Ah, so he played Mickey Mouse. Maybe he was in like a Mickey Mouse.
But he says he played himself. Or maybe it's a character called Self. I don't know. But this is. Listeners, find out what this is. Mouse size, go.
And they had two seasons of it. He was in season two. This one says, it says season two, but on IMDb it's only 1983.
So it says season two, but there is no season one.
Maybe it wasn't picked up.
Maybe. This is all my. I'm just gonna be a fanatic for mouse size now. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
There you go. You do that and report back to us tomorrow. Let us know what you find out about that.
Mouse size.
Mouse size. There you go. Okay. So, yeah, she's been in a few movies. This is probably her most prominent role.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, I mean, she was only on one episode of It's Gary Shandling. And, I mean, on IMDb, there's a picture of her and, what's his name? Can you remember his name at this point? From Full House. She was in Full House.
Yeah, one episode. John Stamos.
Right, John Stamos. She's one episode of Full
House. From ER.
Oh, okay, there you go. You think of him from ER. There you go. Very good.
I may have watched all of ER fairly recently.
Yes. Barely. It's been like 2 years, hasn't it?
It's been, yeah, well.
Yeah. But whatever, most of her credits are like TV episodes. She has a few movies. She's a movie called Body Rock. Yeah. Maybe Kuno Sponholz was in that one also. I don't know.
Got turned down for that one.
Sounds like
too, too highbrow for him.
Apparently. Don't know. But so the first of all, they're here at the University of Chicago. What do you know about the University of Chicago, Jay?
It is in Chicago. It is some kind of higher education establishment. It existed at least before 1977.
Okay, so the University of Chicago.
End of list.
There you go. The University of Chicago is also known as UChicago, Chicago, U of C, or UChi, or UChai, something like that. It is a research university in Chicago, Illinois, whose main campus is in Hyde Park. Okay, it is consistently ranked among the best universities in the world, and it is one of the most selective universities in the whole U.S. Okay, they started this they have 97 Nobel laureates that have come from their alumni and staff. Okay, they have 10 Fields medalists, 4 Turing Award winners, 52 MacArthur Fellows, 26 Marshall Scholars, 53 Rhodes Scholars, 27 Pulitzer Prize winners, 20 National Humanities medalists, 29 billionaire graduates who are still alive, and 8 Olympic medalists. It was started in 1890. So, yeah, so it was a little before 1977.
I was right.
There you go. And it was started – one of the founders of it was John D. Rockefeller. And the land was donated by Marshall Field. And I'm not going to go into all the history. There's so much history about this university that it's just
spend so much
not
time
worth
here.
Not worth going into, you know, about the whole thing. Just some famous people that have graduated from there. Ed Asner, who unfortunately just passed away this year. You know, the Emmy Award winning actor.
Paul Fredrickson.
Yes. Anna Klumsky got her degree from there, from My Girl and from Veep.
Yeah.
All right. Roger Ebert got his degree in 1970. He was a former film critic and Pulitzer Prize winner. If anyone who's not familiar, anyone's listening to this probably should know who Roger Ebert is. But if you don't, then there you go. Who else? Sisui Hayakawa. Do you know who that is?
I do not.
He is from Bridge on the River Kwai.
Okay.
He plays the bad guy, I guess you can say. In Bridge on the River Kwai, Colonel Saito.
Okay, I see. Yes.
Which hopefully will be a future season of the show. We'll talk a lot about it.
I want to watch that film again.
Oh, okay. You can still watch it even if we don't.
I can't. I don't have time.
Oh, okay. You only have time if it's if you have to do episodes like that. Okay, that would.
You don't know how true that is.
I understand that. Trust me. Mary Lou Henner, who's an actress mostly known for her role in Taxi. Celeste Holm, who won an Oscar She was in Gentleman's Agreement, All About Eve, High Society. Philip Kaufman, do you know who that is?
The name rings a bell.
He was the director of The Right Stuff,
Not because of that. Okay.
among other movies that he was director of. Leopold and Loeb.
Again, I recognize the name, but
They
couldn't tell you
were
what they do.
murderers in the 1920s who, just for the fun of it, decided to, murder a friend of theirs. And, the
Oh,
movie
Rope.
Rope.
The guys that Rope was built
That's
based on.
right. The movie that Rope is based on. Okay. Elaine May graduated from there. She was a
Nice.
screenwriter, actress, director.
Yep.
Heaven Can Wait, Primary Colors, Heartbreak Kid,
What
and
was the oh, what was
Ishtar.
it called? Ishtar's the yeah.
Ishtar, which is what killed her
And she,
career.
yes, and she worked with she started with Mike Nichols.
That's right. And Mike Nichols is the next person on that list, on the
Yep.
list. Mike Nichols also worked there, also studied there. They both graduated the same year.
They had a comedy troupe.
Yes,
They were a comedy duo.
that's correct. And he's actually one of the co-founders of Second City.
Ah, nice.
Kimberly Pierce, who is the director of Boys Don't Cry.
Yep.
Okay, she also graduated from there. David Steinberg, do you know who that is?
Feel like I should recognize the name.
He's a director and comedian who did a show where he was interviewing all these different comedians for a few years. I'm trying to remember the name of the show. Don't remember the name of that show. Who else? The actor Fritz Weaver, who was in Holocaust, Failsafe, and Black Sunday. All right. Now there are there's Supreme Court justices that were there. John Paul Stevens graduated from there.
David Steinberg's show was called The David Steinberg Show.
No, there was something else. It was called something else.
Did have a show called The David Steinberg Show.
I'm sure he did, but that isn't the one I'm talking about.
Inside comedy.
Inside Comedy. There you go. Yeah, which was great. It's a really fun show. They have like he did a whole bunch of them. He was also a director of Curb Your Enthusiasm and things like that. But he has all of these great interviews with like one-on-one interviews with a whole bunch of comic legends, just talking about comedy and stuff like that. He had 36 episodes between 2012 and 2015.
Nice.
And then he I guess the show just didn't continue after that. Yeah. You also have Robert Bork, who was someone who was supposed to be a Supreme Court justice, but didn't work. Didn't get in there. Advisors to David Axelrod, the advisor to Obama and Bill Clinton. And someone that I thought Bernie Sanders also graduated from there. And the one that really shocked me was Elliot Ness graduated from there.
That may make sense.
I mean, it
But
goes way back, but yeah. There you go, Elliot Ness.
Costner himself.
Yes. And that's pretty much, again, we have the I love yous back and forth between Harry and Amanda, and that pretty much ends this episode. So, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, we got into my kidnap side plot, so that's the main thing I wanted to get to. So no.
Okay. All right. So the script has a few little discrepancies here, but I like the way that some of them go. The first thing is as I mentioned every season, one of the things I love about reading scripts is the descriptive aspects of the script. So it starts off here, basically starts off the movie because the last two episodes we didn't really have anything to say about the script. So it's documentary footage of an older couple, a man and a woman. They're sitting together on a love seat, looking straight at the camera. The documentary dialogue that follows is meant only as an indication. The movie will use real people, not actors, and we'll be hearing their actual stories, which will be similar to the ones indicated here. And then we have the story from Kuno Spunholtz. Talking and he mentions Kornblum and he mentions the Horde and Hardened Cafe. And there's just one line that's thrown in there and he goes, it was a Horde and Hardened cafeteria. They don't have them anymore. And they somehow, for some reason, they cut that out, which is pretty funny because, as we said, it lasted till 1991. So they still had them for another 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say about that part of the script. And then, the rest of the dialogue is word for word from the story. So I find it really funny that he mentions that we're only using this as an indication and it's not really what's going to be. And then it's almost
not
word
this,
for word.
Like this, not this, like this.
Exactly. It could be something like this, and we're going to take out, we're going to take out five, six words, and then it'll be exactly it. There you go. So then it says fade in, external of the University of Chicago campus, day 10 years ago. So obviously they changed it to 1977 instead of 10 years ago because the movie takes place over a period of 12 years. Exactly. And then it says a couple in a clinch. The young man involved is named Harry Burns. He's 26 years old, just graduated from law school, wearing jeans and a sweatshirt. He's kissing a young woman named Amanda. She has long straight hair that she irons, which is not what we have here.
Yes. Big mess of girl a little bit.
She's about 20. The embrace is fairly melodramatic. They pull back to look at one another. And then Amanda says, I love you. And then Harry says, I love you back. Okay, so it switched it around. I mean, again, it's the same thing. It doesn't really make a difference. But I love the way that they describe things. I mean, tomorrow we'll get a great description of Sally, just like we get a description of Harry today.
Did you always think of Harry as being 26 here?
No,
I'd assumed he was like 20 to 22, somewhere in the region that you normally graduate from university.
Well, no, I understood him to be a little bit older because of the fact that later on, you know, they talk about the fact that she's actually 12 years later, 32, 33. Okay, you're right. It makes sense. That's, I mean, first of all, the toupee here is really hilarious on Billy Crystal. I mean, if you listen to the commentary, and I've listened to both commentaries, there's one just with Rob Reiner and there's one with Rob Reiner, Nora Ephron, and Billy Crystal. And they make fun of the fact that they kept calling this the Jack Lord toupee because it makes him look like he's in Hawaii Five-O.
Yeah, I can see that. Billy Crystal, this isn't an insult, he's not a guy who, like, hairlines are an odd thing for Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
He's never had, like, a lot of hair at the front of his head.
Yes.
Which this shows why, I guess. It's just kind of, someone's just dropped something dead on him.
Yeah.
It hasn't scurried away yet.
Correct. But what can you do?
Yeah, it just doesn't look right. But
yeah,
I mean, yeah, I think they do a decent job. Other than this, with making the actors look younger
in this film
when required. I mean, the clothing helps. We'll get more into that tomorrow, I guess.
But correct. Yeah. All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Harry Burns Hunt Day. Obviously, we just got introduced to Harry Burns, so it works perfectly that we're talking about him starting today. So basically, we are going to talk about my guest's top five films or top five performances of Billy Crystal. So what have you got for us? Hopefully, you've seen more than you saw of Meg Ryan on Monday.
Technically, yes. But when I got this list, well, I kind of guessed this is what the topics would be. Because, you know, I've done your show before. And so I thought, oh, Meg Ryan's going to be tough. I've seen loads of Billy Crystal films. I've only seen 7, it turns out.
Like Billy Crystal comparatively, films. That's a lot.
Yes.
You've seen twice as many Billy Crystal movies as you've seen...
Almost.
Yeah.
So honorable mention for Hamlet is the one.
I love him in that movie.
He's good. My number 5 is This is Spinal Tap, which... mainly for his deleted scenes. He's not in the film a great deal. He's like the head of the mime waiters. Mime is money. But there's a lot more deleted material on YouTube that I think is well worth watching. And he's also Bruno Kirby, also in that scene.
Yes.
So my number 4 is City Slickers. He's great in City Slickers. Fantastic. 4 and up are strong recommendations. So the opposite of when Harry, of Meg Ryan, where 1 is a recommendation and then the rest of the list I don't really care about.
Yeah.
But yeah, 4 and up, I recommend it. So City Slickers is great. My number 3 is When Harry Met Sally.
Really?
Yes, my number 3, which for the same reason as Meg Ryan was number 1. This is an excellent performance. He just gets to a great deal. He's very good in it, but he's just, in my opinion, better in the next 2. Number 2 is a much smaller role, though. Number 2 is Princess Bride. I love him in The Princess Bride.
Have fun storming the castle.
Absolutely. That scene he has is incredible. Makes me laugh every time. Princess Bride, perfect film. And my number 1, you can probably guess what my number 1 would be, Rob, knowing me, the films that I like, and the films
Con
that
Air.
I enjoy. Yes, absolutely. Billy Crystal, he lights up the screen as the Marietta Mangler. He's fantastic as Scarlet Green, singing with that little girl in the empty swimming pool. No, it is, of course, his role as Mike. Oh, God. Mike Wazowski in Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, of course. University.
Both of them. I'm going to actually pick Monsters University as being his better performance. He's great in both of them. He's fantastic in both of them. But in Monsters University, he's 15 years older. I'm not sure what the dates when that film came out. But he still sounds the same.
No, he's 15 years younger.
But Billy Crystal...
Ah, Billy Crystal is older, right.
Is much older, but he's playing somebody much younger. So I feel like that's a harder acting performance to pull off. And he does it very well.
Okay. So I like Monsters University better than Monsters, Inc.
That's an unusual opinion that I do not share, but I do love them both. And I'm still bitter that Monsters University was not nominated for a Best Animated Feature Award at the Oscars. It should have been. It's better than The Croods. It's better than The Croods. It's just a fact. It's better than The Croods.
Okay, that's fair. Completely fair.
It's just a fact, Rob. It's just a fact.
But that's fine, because you and I don't get to vote. And at the time, you know, we can blame, Connie Sawyer. She was still voting back then.
She's on my list. She made the list. She broke the tie that she voted for The Croods. She's a big Nick Cage fan, I guess, which I can understand.
Apparently. Right. So, Jay, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yep, today I'm going to plug something you plugged in the my intro. I am the host of Lampity over on The Lamb. The Lamb is the large association of movie blogs, largeassmovieblogs.com, which is where Rob and I met, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is a huge global organization of movie blogs and people who just like write about films and do so for a hobby. And there's blogs and podcasts and all kinds of things over there. So if you are listening and you have a movie blog or podcast and think, hey, I want to talk to some other people about movies, where can I do that? Head over to The Lamb, largeassmovieblogs.com, and join the flock. I'm also the shepherd for The Lamb, but that's kind of an honorary title these days. Not a lot happens other than keep making sure the website keeps ticking along. And so, yes, the Lampity is on the Lambcast feed. It's the official podcast of The Lamb, which I used to host, which I retired from hosting that a couple of years ago at this point. Richard Kirkham now hosts it, but I still host Lampity, which is our movie trivia version of Jeopardy. It's a monthly show, a tournament, a lot of fun. Rob took part in it a couple of years ago at this point. I took part in it last year as a contestant. I can't tell you how well I got on because Rob isn't up to date yet on the episode.
No, not yet. I got a really long backlog. I'll get to it eventually. I know it was in December. I was in November. And maybe you were on December also. If you won November, we'll have to wait and see.
I couldn't tell you, Rob. I couldn't tell you. You'll find
out. But you did make it into the semifinals. That's the thing that people need to know.
And I'm very grateful to you, Rob, for always sending me questions I can use in the show. So thank you very much for doing
that. Yeah, except for the ones that, well, you see, this year it's a little more difficult because there were at least two episodes, if not three, that I couldn't send you questions for.
Yep. Well, I'm very grateful to Todd Liebenau for guest hosting those. He was the winner of the 2021 tournament, and he guest hosted the shows that I have been on for 2022. So thank you, Todd. And everyone else who sends in questions and is great fun on those shows. You actually have some of our previous contestants and previous question writers coming up in your season, I believe.
Yes.
I look forward to that. Lampity is where you can find me once a month hosting movie trivia.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. Find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. Or you can go to my website, moverabminute.com. So, until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.